keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again with your host, Nick Burnaby on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back to the show. We're glad to be back with you. Had a great show on Monday. Had a crazy debate going on, and a couple of the people that were part of that debate are here tonight in the studio with us. I'm joined by Jake Anderson, one of our awesome journalists. How are you doing tonight, Jake?
Good, man. Yeah, that was a fun debate on Monday. I was a little worked up, a little bit more calm and nuanced tonight. I took a Quaalude just now, so I shouldn't be as worked up as I was on Monday, and thank you for having me here, Nick.
Now, did you take it voluntarily, or was that Cosby that slipped it to you a little earlier when he was visiting?
Yeah. Well, Bill's a good guy, but he's a little aggressive. This is a terrible tangent joke.
Yeah, that was a bad introduction.
Joking about that. Bill Cosby's a complete total asshole.
Yes, he is. Very much so.
Actually, asshole is an understatement. But anyway, let's move on.
I'm also joined in the studio tonight by Cassius Methel. How are you doing tonight, Cassius?
Doing great, man.
Cassius is also one of our journalists here at the Anti-Media, and me and him actually collaborated on an article today regarding the EPA spill, and we got some info on that we covered today. Also, some another interesting angle, a little speculation that we're going to talk about as well. But first, let's get into this EPA topic, man, because some of the news that we covered today on the Anti-Media was about how the Navajo Nation is basically first of all, they declared an emergency, because what's happening is that this toxic wastewater, which is full of things like arsenic and all kinds of poisonous shit, it was spilled originally in a river up in Colorado, but now it's obviously flowing downstream, and now it's getting into New Mexico and Arizona and all these other states. But now it's starting to affect the Navajo Nation, which is a huge area that consists of various Navajo Indian tribes. And you know, these guys are vowing to hold whoever is responsible for this thing accountable. Cash, what can you tell us about this whole situation?
I think the important thing to realize in this situation is that it's by no means an isolated incident. This is one of many times in history when Native American land reservations, the last things they have left, have been polluted, contaminated, and looted for their resources with no regard for the land after they take that valuable resource. As you said earlier, Nick, I think it's like they were given this land that was once thought to be the worst land, the least valuable land to have. And then they discovered, you know, different companies and all kinds of people discover that this land that they thought was useless or relatively useless, it actually has valuable resources. In the 50s, it was discovered that uranium deposits were in. I believe it was a reservation in Washington State, Spokane. So they set up shop and looted that land for everything they could, all the uranium they could, polluted it to shit, and you know that's.
And then they left, and then all the people, all the Native Americans that were more or less banished to these areas, to these Indian reservations, are left with the mess. They're left with this uranium mess, and so we're talking about, you know, this EPA spill. A lot of it is leftover stuff from the mines that were in that area, and just like in Spokane, the mines that were up here in Colorado and all over this area, this is where they used to extract uranium to build the nuclear bombs. You know, so you got the government as the customer that uses the uranium to build bombs. They use it to, you know, make power plants and all this other stuff. And then you got these mining corporations, which for a long time have been in bed with the government. And basically, these corporations are given free rein. They get to go in, just tear this shit up, tear the shit out of this land. You know, take all the uranium out of it, and then they abandon the mines. And then basically, these Native Americans are left behind to deal with the aftermath. And you know, we doing some research today on this article. I was looking at the EPA's website, and according to the EPA, this is right an excerpt right off of their website. Today, the mines are closed, but a legacy of uranium contamination remains, including over 500 abandoned uranium mines, as well as homes and drinking water sources with elevated levels of radiation. Potential health effects include lung cancer from inhalation of radioactive particles, as well as bone cancer and impaired kidney function from exposure to radionuclides in drinking water. So, you know, all of this big fuss is being made about the Animas River, which is the river where this stuff got dumped into. And don't get me wrong, I mean, that's obviously horrible, but the backstory here that no one's really talking about is that these people have been getting the short end of the stick since, as you mentioned, Cassius, since the 50s. This stuff has been going on since the 50s. They've been doing a bunch of, you know, mining, and this back in the 50s, they had very little knowledge about how bad this radioactivity was. But, you know, over time in the 60s and the 70s, they started realizing, oh shit, this stuff is really bad. But they continue doing it anyway. And so, according to the EPA, I mean, on the EPA's website, they make all these claims about how they're remediating the problem and that they've allocated like $10 million to help these people. But that's $10 million, dude. I don't even think one cancer case is worth $10 million. You know what I mean? We're talking about thousands of people that have been exposed to this shit, and they're allocating several $1 million to go help them. Anyway, the EPA sits there on their website and acts like they've done a bunch of stuff to help these people. The fact of the matter is that after doing a little bit of research, looking at some of these Native American websites, you'll see that the struggle continues. They have never got fully compensated. They have never fully gotten taken care of health-wise or any of that stuff. You know, all of it is – yeah, exactly. I mean, it's all – it's
sick of this.
It's all bad. And, you know, these mining companies have the audacity to even try to reopen the mines via backdoor deals with the government. And this is goes back to the common theme we have going on here.
They're still trying to open them up. They're trying to, you know, open the uranium mines again.
Exactly.
But yeah, this is, you know, just one piece in a larger perspective of a whole entire paradigm of, you know, doing this.
It's kind of a cruel irony, actually, if you think about it. It's interesting the EPA now being a part of this, because the EPA and the government is very much a part of big oil and big pollution. I'll just call it big pollution. Why don't we just call it big evil? I mean, but the government is hand in hand with them every step of the way. And now we get this little sliver of, oh, you're actually directly responsible now. Well, guess what? You know, are directly responsible every step of the way by letting these corporations come in and do whatever the hell they want in these sacred lands. And let's be honest, Navajo Nation and various other tribes, they've been getting the short end of the stick for centuries now.
Since the Europeans landed,
right.
You know.
So this is just part and parcel of a long history of oppression, and it's sickening, and we shouldn't allow this.
So what is coming of this? There's, with every crisis that people face like this, there's an opportunity for unity and to have a reason to come together and do something after this. So I feel like the only way to turn this disaster into something better is to utilize, well, contrary to the elites utilizing crises for bad things, we need to utilize this crisis to get unity and to gather together and practice the societal civic duty of making sure things like this don't happen, you know, defending land from things like this before it happens, just coming together in our different bodies of people, the Navajo people, us people, coming together with the common denominator of wanting to have just a peaceful, free,
how about some straight
society.
Up?
We need to come together to make use of this and unite all of our various groups of people who want the same good things for society. Activists, Native Americans.
Well said, man. And short of the 10 million that Nick was lampooning before, why don't we come out with some straight up real time reparations for our peoples that we have destroyed? Why don't we actually dump? So why don't we cut our military budget in half, and we're going to get into some military budget stuff in a little while. Why don't we cut that in half and actually dump some real-time reparations into oppressed peoples?
Exactly, man. And this kind of goes back to our, it kind of goes back to our meme, our promotional meme here for the show tonight. It's like, well, if the government has nothing to hide, then why are they worried about all these whistleblowers and stuff? Many times this is how we get the information that we're talking about is from these whistleblowers, because the government does all these horrible things. So one of the questions I have, going back to this, the original question here with this spill and how did this happen? Well, then you gotta go back and say, okay, well, you know, why is the EPA in charge of cleaning up after these mining companies in the first place? Where in the hell are the mining companies? You know, they went and, you know, dug up all this shit, created all this pollution. Well, where are the companies now? Why aren't they cleaning up after their own mess? I mean, when I make a mess, if I do something, if I wreck my car, you know, I got to go, you know, pay for it. If I wreck someone else's car, if I burn someone's house down, I pay for it. Yet these corporations, you know, they create uranium poisoning all over the country. And somehow the EPA is the one cleaning up after this shit. You know what I'm saying? So it makes you wonder. And it goes back to what Jake is saying. It's like the common theme we have going on here in the U.S. is that we're privatizing the profits. So these mining companies, yeah, they mine this uranium out of the land and they go and they make a bunch of profits. They sell it to the nuclear reactors. They sell it to the DOD so they can make nuclear bombs and shit. And yeah. Then all of us end up paying for the cleanup because through the EPA, we're all paying that bill.
Well, let's get into this conspiracy now, man. It's time. Now you're talking about this contract, man.
So
this is some gnarly. I mean, maybe you weren't ready to get into this yet, but Nick found some stuff earlier. And look, I'm always ready to talk about a conspiracy theory, but this one takes the cake.
This one
really takes the cake.
So I called the guy that made this letter to the editor, and now I've confirmed all of this information. Now the of course it still remains a theory and a conspiracy.
No, but set it up.
But I definitely want to throw this out there because this is definitely a whole nother side of this spill that needs to be addressed here. Before we go into this though, first I want to bring in Manny. Manny Aguilar from Los Angeles. How you doing tonight, Manny?
Hey, Manny.
Hey, how's it going? How's it going, Jake and DV? He's out there somewhere. And Brother Cash out there. We're doing pretty good. I've been putting a lot of heat on Walmart and Sam's Club, you know, obviously because of the call out for what happened, obviously, as you guys know, in Ohio. His father has basically told activists to boycott from August the 5th to September the 5th. The Walmart. You forgot to mention the Sam's Club, but that's where Manny comes in. You know, I mentioned it to everybody and stuff like that, you know. And so so basically just telling a lot of these young activists, you know, they got to know what they're fighting for, because some of them have no clue. You know, some of these wannabes, they're here because their friends are there. You know what? I'm getting tired of those people. Know why you're there boycotting whatever you're boycotting and stuff like that. But I did put a lot of smiles today for people, you know, on this little piglet that was saved and stuff like that. I even sent it to Nick. That. And also, I'm losing hope in people in this country, something like that, you know, a little bit get safe and stuff like that and everything. And it kind of brings a little emotional feeling to myself and say maybe there is hope for humanity, you know? So
Man, I share your sentiment, dude. It's easy. It's easy. It's easy to feel like it's time to lose hope.
Yeah, you know, there's always going to be a bunch of dumb people. But the thing that gives me hope is the people that tune into the radio show tonight,
yeah,
the people here with us right now.
Exactly.
You know, these are all smart people that are, you know, not falling for the bullshit masses, you know, the shit that the masses are eating up, the shit the mainstream media is putting out there. We're never going to be able to save everybody, man. There's always going to be a lot of people that are going to just fall victim to the group mentality, the masses and all that shit.
But we're going
to always
going to
be,
we're
always going
to
be those people. Manny, before we dip into this, a little bit more of this conspiracy side of things on this EPA fallout, I wanted to get your opinion on the treatment of the indigenous people here in the United States, man, like the Native American people. And, you know, we talked about it at the beginning of the show about all this, the environmental oppression going on against the Native Americans with their land and the pollution. And you know, we could throw the Keystone Pipeline in there because they're also stealing land back from, you know, they put Native American people into these lands, the reservations. They basically banished them to these reservations. Well, now guess what? They want to build the Keystone Pipeline through the reservations, and the Native Americans say, no, we're not going to let you build that shit through our reservations. And now this is why this has become such a big political issue. If they were just building this pipeline through private land, it wouldn't even be a political issue. It would just be a business issue. The fact of the matter is, the reason Congress is involved, the reason the executive branch is involved, is they have to use eminent domain to steal land, not only from Native Americans, but from ranchers, farmers, and a bunch of other people. What do you think about all this treatment of the Native Americans, Manny?
Well, I've always been very vocal because I work with a lot of them. My favorite tribe happens to be the Hopi, but no disrespect to the other tribe that I work with. We did a big march for them up there in Orange County, all the way to San Juan Capistrano, you know, Orange County, and stuff like that. And I'm very sad, by the way, there's some of the most forgotten, most mistreated people in the United States, to say the least, you know. And it's really sad because a lot of the Native Americans from here, actually, when they built the border, some of them were left on the Mexican side and stuff like that. So I see, you know, both sides, you know, stuff like that. And so I hear people saying to me all the time, well, Manny, they took our American, which I like to say our Latin American, as you know, because America is big, you know. I said, your government, you say they took the Indians' land and then they gave them something else. Well, dude, no disrespect, but it's like taking Beverly Hills away from me and giving me content or East LA, you know. Come on, dude, really? You know?
Yeah, so, exactly. So,
you know, it's just kind of crazy. It's just like that. But they have been some of the most forgotten. A lot of them, you know, have been fighting the government. They've been fighting for what's right and stuff like that. And so I get kind of very supportive behind them because I see their cause. Here we're talking about the white privilege, and we're talking about, you know, when people tell me, well, get the hell out of my country, I said, well, if you're not red man, a red man, you know, a red woman, you shouldn't be telling me that, yeah, because the Indians were here first, you know, and stuff like that. And so they've been kind of mistreated, and there's no doubt about it. The history that I've read throughout Mexico, because we took world history down there instead of Mexican history or U.S. history, you know. And they, you know, when you start, you know, researching, because I don't believe everything the books tell me, I start researching on my own and start, you know, actually talking to a lot of them that have passed away now. And basically knowing that the government and the military killed a lot of those people off, you know, supposedly giving them blankets and they had diseases and et cetera. And I can go on all night about this and stuff like that. So I'm very appalled about what's happening to the Native Americans, especially when I have been touched by them because I have marched alongside of them. That's what I'm saying, you know.
Hey, Manny, I have a meme that I shared the other day that it was about the colonists coming to Plymouth and the Native Americans building a wall and not letting them in because they didn't seem like they were willing to assimilate quickly enough. Let me find the exact meme.
I think we just discussed the problem. We discussed the problem that, you know, we're talking about. And if we fail to move on to the solution part of this, then what's even the point of doing this? So that's my sole focus for my writing, for everything I'm personally doing. So, you know, I see this as an opportunity to create unity and to have a reason to unite different bodies of people in society, unite all these people that have the common denominator of concern to have a better world to live in. And despite any differences we might have, say this activist movement we're in, the Navajo people, Black Lives Matter, whoever it is, we have a common denominator.
Yep.
And we can't be divided, and we have to come up with solutions, and we're most strong together.
Exactly, man. And that's what the media is doing. We're going to get into some of this other stuff that the media is doing to drive wedges between groups of people, because it is a huge problem and people fall for it really easily. We're going to get into that once we get through this conspiracy stuff that's going on, because this is pretty crazy, man. So basically, let me kind of put some context to this. There's a little newspaper out over by literally exactly where this EPA spill happened. Up in Colorado, and it's a newspaper called the Silver Standard. It's been around since 1875. It's in print, and they also have a website. I ran into this clipping from the newspaper that was posted on July 30th, which was, you know, several days before the EPA spill happened. But basically, there was a gentleman there in this town called Farmington, Colorado, by the name of Dave Taylor, and several days before the EPA spill happened, he basically wrote a letter to the editor of this newspaper saying that the EPA was planning on purposely spilling these toxic chemicals into the river to give themselves an excuse to build this giant $100 to $500 million treatment plant.
Unbelievable.
Which kind of goes back to our theme of where the EPA and the corporations work together, because who's going to build the treatment plant? Well, the EPA doesn't build nothing. They contract it out and they give the contract to their buddies or whatever. But this guy who claims to be has 47 years of professional experience as a geologist, made this alarmingly accurate prediction. And keep in mind, this was posted like over a week before the spill happened, and it's completely legitimate. I've looked it up and it's confirmed. And so this is just something that we have out there. I called the guy today. I talked to his wife a little bit. The guy was busy mowing his lawn. He couldn't talk to me. He's just a regular retired guy.
He was busy putting a tinfoil hat on.
He was building a wall to keep the pollution out from the river. But anyway, we're going to try to get a hold of this guy tomorrow and get a better idea of what he was talking about. I don't know if he had inside information. According to the letter, it doesn't seem like he had inside information. But basically what he's saying is that the EPA was implementing this plan that they started doing maybe a month or two ago to try to deal with this wastewater that has ended up, you know, leaking into the river. The EPA, according to what this guy is saying, the plan that the EPA was, you know, fulfilling was flawed from the beginning. And it was so flawed that from this guy's perspective, and he predicted it a week beforehand, was that it was a plan that was actually designed to fail, and it was actually by design. It was supposed to leak into the river to create the problem reaction solution, more or less. This is something that we're going to cover in depth tomorrow if we can get a hold of this guy. So keep an eye out for this stuff tomorrow on the anti-media. We're going to try to talk to him and see what he has to say. Yeah. You know, maybe he just got lucky and guessed that this was going to happen. Maybe he knew something more. We don't know yet. So all I know is that he did predict it. It really happened. The paper printed it out a week beforehand, and it's there. Anybody that wants to look it up, go to SilvertonStandard.com, and it's like the top story there, because a lot of people were asking them, hey, did you really print this, or is this a hoax? And they confirmed, yes, we actually did print this.
And
it's
his level of detail, this is a guy that knows what he's talking about.
He knows his shit.
He knows his shit. He gets down to the actual measurements. It does not sound like a conspiracist. It sounds like a guy that knew a certain kind of engineering was going on, and that it was going on in a way that was irresponsible enough to where it felt to him like it was doomed to fail from the beginning, which happens to be an alarming coincidence given that the people who stand to benefit from this are the people that would be setting up the treatment plant that would be cleaning up the pollution. So it's an incredibly disturbing story.
Exactly. We just posted an article about it on the anti-media about an hour ago from the Free Thought Project. Keep in mind, that article is basically just saying what we just said.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we're going to try to really dig deep into this and talk to the guy and see what he knows. So that's really all we know right now about this story. So we're going to Talk about that some more tomorrow on the site. We'll probably, if it does turn into something credible, we'll talk about it again on Monday on our next show. So just keep a lookout for that. So I want to first move on to this next story here that I have, because this one has kind of made me a little bit mad. And what I'm talking about is, first of all, the scenario in Ferguson going on. Once again, you got a bunch of militarized cops. You got a bunch of people getting pepper sprayed. You got journalists getting beat up. A guy got gunned down. I saw the video. The video came out. It was trending like all day. The mainstream media framed it up as like, oh, look, this guy was shooting at the cops. From what I could tell, it looked like the guy wasn't shooting first. It looked like first someone else shot and then the guy shot after. I mean, of course, it was a really short clip, really fast, couldn't see what was all going on. Again, we have to take the cops' word for it, which is
very,
you know, I mean, that's what the mainstream media is putting out there, is what the cops said. You know, we all know that we can't really take what they say credible.
No.
So there's no telling what really happened over there, whether that guy shot at the cops first, whether the cops shot first, whether somebody else shot and then the cops started shooting and then the guy shot back.
The cop is guilty until proven innocent, in my opinion, at this point.
From my point of view, yes. And the other question is, you know, Ferguson was ground zero for this police accountability movement. And, you know, all these supposed reforms went in. It's like, yeah, we're going to put body cameras on all these cops. Why were none of the cops that shot this guy wearing body cameras? You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't even matter if they're wearing body cameras. If they get caught shooting someone, nothing happens, because they can say any modicum of physical movement they can claim was some form of, you know, physical provocation at this point.
But so, well, I want to know why they're arresting a 12-year-old that's just marching peacefully. 12-year-old. That's what got me, you know?
Yeah, man. And, you know, this stuff is just, I mean, so ridiculous. Then we have another angle to this story that emerged overnight and last couple days, I guess. It was trending all day today as well, was this whole thing with the Oath Keepers. And I want to, you know, I just want to get some clarification out here, because everything that we're being told about the Oath Keepers is coming from CNN, NBC, MSNBC, you know, all these asshats in the media are telling us that, oh, there's a bunch of racist bigots running around Ferguson with guns threatening to kill black people. You know, this is the narrative coming out of the mainstream media, but...
Well, it's just because they're from InfoWars. I mean, that's the reason.
They happen to be with a guy from, a journalist from InfoWars.
Well, right, okay,
you know?
More disinformation for me, yeah, my bad. Let me clarify, they're not from InfoWars.
Yeah, they're not from InfoWars, man. But, like, you know, here's the thing, dude, is that... Everybody said a bunch of shit about these guys without knowing the first thing about them, you know, and anybody can go to the Oath Keeper website and see what they're about. I mean, these are all former military people, former cops that are pissed off at the system. They're not out there trying to shoot gun down black people.
Right.
They're pissed off at what the cops are doing. The reason
see why people would be alarmed.
The reason, you know, they're called Oath Keepers is because these guys feel that the cops and the military, not everyone, but a lot of the cops in the military in this country aren't upholding their oath to the Constitution. You know, and they're not upholding the Bill of Rights. These are
Sorry,
all things
it's,
that
it's
these
a
guys are.
Name,
these are the guys that are. They're supposed to be sworn to uphold the Bill of Rights and shit. And of course, we see the cops out there being some of the biggest, you know, violators of the Bill of Rights. And so the mainstream media put out this narrative
right.
that, okay, there's a bunch of these racist white dudes out there with AK-47s and AR-15s getting ready to just gun down black people in the streets. That couldn't be any further from the truth. And the only way you to know what is actually the truth nowadays is to go right to the source. And thankfully, there's several interviews now online. The Free Thought Project has an article. Just Google the Free Thought Project, Oath Keepers, Ferguson. You'll find it.
It's an interview with one of the Oath Keepers.
One of the Oath Keepers is giving an interview, and I'm here to tell you, these guys aren't the racist bigots that MSNBC has tried to make them out to be. The guy sat there and said it. Black Lives Matter. He said, I can't stand the fact that they gunned down Tamir Rice. I can't stand the fact that they gunned down Mike Brown. I can't stand the fact that they choked Eric Garner to death for selling a cigarette. And he said, where does it say in the Constitution that the sentence for selling untaxed cigarettes is death?
Yeah.
You know, so the fact of the
that
matter
makes
is,
me really excited,
you know,
dude.
Now don't get me wrong. I don't want to say that everyone should be okay with the Oath Keepers. Maybe it does make people uncomfortable. Maybe people did find it weird that people were walking around with guns and stuff. And that's understandable. But the narrative has been skewed, and it's been trying to divide and conquer white versus black, black versus white. This is the narrative continually pushed out by the media. Why? Because they need us divided, because as long as we're divided, we're neutralized. If we fight each other, then how are we going to fight them if we're just fighting each other the whole time? I mean, it's the simplest war tactic out there. I mean, I'm pretty sure Sun Tzu talked about this in depth in The Art of War. I mean, you turn your enemies against each other and they fight each other instead of fighting themselves. Our military has military has been documented using the same exact tactic in Iraq against the Sunni tribesmen. The military, our U.S. military literally created the people that are these radical Islamic Sunni, you know,
ISIS?
Militants, the precursors of ISIS. The U.S. military literally divided and conquered the Sunni people against each other in Iraq. You know how there's all these suicide bombings in Iraq? Oh, the Shiite bombed the Sunni and the Sunni bombed the Shiite. They call it sectarian violence. The U.S. manufactured that on purpose. This is now documented fact. Anybody can Google this stuff. These tactics that have been used in Iraq, and they used them in Iran, they use them in Libya, they use them all over the world. Now those exact same tactics are being used right here against our own people domestically. And now they're trying to pit everybody that may look different from each other, even though we all kind of are stuck in a pretty similar situation. A lot of people have it worse than others, but what I'm trying to say is that what they're doing is they're pitting poor people against each other, and so that we fight each other instead of fighting the real problem. Cassius, go ahead.
That's fundamentally what it comes down to. Unity and our power to make society what we think it should be and hold the powers accountable and together. So this unity is what we must foster and nourish, and that's what they want to break. Anything that's endangering our unity and our functioning bodies of people that make society the way it should be, they want to break that up. We have to, you know, oppose this effort to break that up. And furthermore, unite all the various groups of people who have the common interest of making society better. That's the bottom line.
I got a perspective on this as well, which is, and if the narrative, I haven't been keeping actually track of the mainstream narrative of how CNN and whatnot is covering Oath Keepers, but I've long believed that the next big mainstream push against domestic terrorism or any kind of terrorism is going to be against quote-unquote militants. Now, this is a disturbingly brilliant opportunity for the government to now incite some violence, get some Oath Keepers to fire back, and now make them the new enemy number one, domestic terrorist enemy number one. I think number two will be cyber terrorism coming up. But, I mean, Nick, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I think if they can – I mean, here we are. They have the Oath Keepers. They're there with guns. All we need is a little bit of violence to go on, and you have basically the media could call it a civil war.
Well, that's the thing, is that the Oath Keepers are kind of a wild card, and the right. government doesn't know how to deal with them. That's why they're painted as this anti-government extremist right. racist group, when in reality they're not anti-government. They actually are kind of statists from yeah. my perspective. They believe in the Constitution
right.
and they believe in like upholding the Constitution, and they use guns to back it up.
So I mean, actually love them.
You know, that's yeah, they're kind of a militia of a bunch of ex-military militiamen kind of. And you know, a lot of the memes, and I hate to say it, but a lot of my friends, even my own friends' websites and Facebook pages that are maybe leaning over to the left, they're more progressive pages and stuff like that. You know, and I got to criticize them too, because they bought right into this narrative as well. And a lot of them are saying like, well, if there were black people in Ferguson walking around with AR-15s, they'd be shot dead in the streets. But that's definitely not the case, because if you look back at Ferguson during the hearing of when the officers, when Darren Wilson was not charged, there was actually several black men in Ferguson with AR-15s guarding some of the stores, making sure they weren't being looted. And they weren't arrested. They weren't gunned down. You know, and so this is a false narrative. And the Free Thought Project article kind of shows this bogus narrative for what it is. It's bogus. It's nonsense. It's misinformation. It's divide and conquer. Manny, go ahead.
The one thing that I want to comment about Ferguson, you know, basically is that the government, the Pentagon, is asking the cops to basically give the equipment back. Well, what I like to see, and you and the brothers take a sip of beer while I'm talking, in Mexico, now coming into international news, why isn't the government saying, hey, we want our equipment back because you're killing your own people, the cops, they're out of control, they're killing our reporters and stuff like that. But that's not the case over there because exactly that's why they send them over there to begin with and stuff like that. So that's hypocritical for the government all of a sudden to say, give us our equipment back because you're out of control, but they don't say that to Mexico, and they send equipment over to them to kill us off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No. Well, no. You're talking about the militarized equipment, the
MRAPs, and all
militarization
that shit
of the local police. Yeah. No, I mean that's you know, anyone looking further than that for proof that the police state has taken over needn't look further. The government dumped billions of dollars into that, and now they have literally a surplus of militarized equipment. They don't know what to do with it. Local police forces, they're like, we want to give this back. We have too much. They gave us so much, we don't even know what to do with it. And it's a joke.
Yeah,
except
man.
That it's not funny.
Yeah, and we have another article here that we're going to jump into while we're on this topic. But first, I just want to reiterate this my stance here, is that the media is going to try to spin anything that is showing the government for what it is. Like in Ferguson, it's showing the police state. It's showing the brutality. It's showing the militarization. Well, instead of focusing in on that, well, let's just make it about, oh, these white dudes walking around with AR-15s that we're going to call racist, even though they're not. I'm sure, don't get me wrong, there probably are some Oath Keepers that are racist, but it's not a racist organization by design, or it's not foundationally built on racism.
They're constitutionalists.
It's built on, yeah, it's a constitutionalist organization. And they the guy in the video, in the interview with the Oath Keeper on the ground in Ferguson, he was down there saying, I just want everybody to be treated equally. That's all I want. He's like, and in another separate interview with the same guy, he was saying, like, yes, the cops are the problem out here. It's not the people. It's the cops that are the problem. So let's forget the mainstream narrative about, oh, the Oath Keepers are racist. They're going to shoot down black people in the streets. No, the Oath Keepers are out there to try to help make sure that no more black people are getting shot by these crooked-ass cops. Okay, so, like, I just want to get that out of the way because it really pissed me off because so many of my friends bought into that narrative, and it's a false narrative. And hopefully people can correct their friends if they see it. It may not be the popular thing to do, but, you know, that's just what it is. It is what it is.
Hey, brother, Nick, take another sip of beer, brother.
All right.
Nick, and to be just to clarify, I bought into it for a laugh. I tried to get a laugh out of it. I said I think we probably don't need more white men with guns walking around Ferguson. Lots of people, imaginary people in my head, laughed at it. but the reality is you know, it's good to be able to change your opinion on things. And I've changed my opinion on this one. I've also changed my opinion on the Black Lives Matter splinter group that interrupted Bernie Sanders. I now think they were in the right. Although this is a continued conversation that is very fervent, and it's actually getting more fervent each day, each hour almost, because this group has now been denounced. The official quote-unquote, and I'm getting off topic here for a minute, but I'll rope it back in. The official Black Lives Matter group has said initially that the two women who interrupted Bernie Sanders were not a part of them. They then retracted that tweet. So there's so much internal.
There's a lot of confusion, yeah, man, and so, that's why we need to try to help straighten these things out.
So let's talk about solutions. One solution to this problem of a divide and conquer agenda going on is to recognize that, which is what we're doing right now. recognize what this agenda is and get it straight to everyone we possibly can that it's divide and conquer. You know, just exactly what we just did is a solution to this thing happening. So if we think in terms of solutions, then we'll actually be accomplishing something. I think that we have to take careful measure to make sure that we're focusing on solutions every time right. we do any activism, anything. Not let anything catch us up. Focus on solutions.
And that's look, I have one more point that I just want to make, and it's that I do not think that Bernie Sanders was disrespectful. Bernie Sanders backed away. He gave them a voice. Okay, now, the people defending him, his ilk, exactly, his fanatical ilk have taken up a completely different narrative. Bernie Sanders, if you watch that tape closely, he raises a finger and he probably wants to talk about his platform and what he wants to do for race relations. He backed away and gave them their space. Okay? So
yeah, we went into this in the last show, man. A bunch of these, you know, white progressives, and I hate to say it, but they all came out and they're like, "Oh, those Black Lives Matter people were out of line. They were rude.
How dare they interrupt the holy
Bernie Sanders?"
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
So, you know, that just goes to show, as much as they may align with the thinking of that movement, you know, the masses are the masses, man. They're going to latch onto these false narratives. If you go back and you listen right. to what the woman actually said, she actually had a lot of good things to say. In fact, she was on MSNBC, and MSNBC right. tried to basically get her to endorse Hillary Clinton, where they're like, "Well, if you don't like Bernie Sanders, obviously you're voting for Hillary Clinton, right? Right? Right?"
So were you paid for her, by the way?
And I shared the video on my own personal profile. I had a bunch of my friends that are reactionary, and don't get me wrong. I mean, nobody's immune to being reactionary or falling into the mass mentality, but my own friends are posting a bunch of – in fact – all the comments I got today were on this one post that I posted yesterday. A bunch of my friends posting a bunch of reactionary comments like, "Oh, yeah, well, you know, this is just, you know, we can't talk about just Black Lives Mattering because everybody matters." It's like, yeah, dude, but, you know, if someone says they want to save the rainforest, does that mean they want to destroy the desert? No, it doesn't. It just means that they're focused on helping the rainforest. And this is what Black Lives Matter is doing. They're focusing in on helping the plight of the black people that have been massively oppressed since the founding of the colonies in this country. And slavery and the caste system, segregation, none of that shit ever actually went away. I mean, it just they changed legislation. And the funny thing is that I got a bunch of these libertarian friends that think that you can't fix anything with laws. And you can't just like legislate problems away, but then they're like, "Well, the black people already got the civil rights movement, so racism is gone." No, racism isn't gone. You don't get rid of racism with a bunch of laws and shit like that. And now, racism is deep rooted, and I'll tell you what, it does come back down to the government, because the government uses that shit against us. I mean, in fact, there was this great video. What was that guy's name? Matthew Cook. There's a great video by this guy named, I think his name is Matthew Cook. It's on Filming Cops. You guys can go see it over there on
Filming Cops videos are brilliant.
But it talks about how literally the powers that be purposely built a caste system that pit poor white people versus poor black people in order to neutralize the poor people's power, because we are the numbers. The poor people are the numbers in the world. You know what I mean? We are the numbers. We have the power. We just don't realize it. And the power that we do have, we spend it wasting it on fighting each other instead of fighting the powers that be. And, you know, that's a big problem. But this brings us up. I mean, I don't want to dive too far into it. Everyone has their own opinions on it, and that's fine. You guys go figure it out. We got plenty of articles there. Check out the video on Filming Cops. Check out the Oath Keeper article on the Free Thought Project. But next we're going to go into a little bit more of this police militarization stuff. Because the fact of the matter is, the cops are now getting armored vehicles to go bust potheads. I mean, this is getting down into the ridiculous. And now we have Carrie Wedler in the studio with us to talk a little bit about this. She wrote a great article about this phenomenon on the anti-media earlier today. The title is "Pentagon Sending Local Police Departments Armored Vehicles to Bust Stoners." Carrie, can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with this story?
Sure. So basically, they're getting the weapons from the 1033 program, which a lot of people are familiar with. It's the Pentagon program that's been arming local police since the 1990s. The funny thing is that this program was actually started to fight the drug war. It wasn't at least on its face, it wasn't some conspiracy to militarize the police. It was like, well, we have a drug war. We have a bunch of equipment that we want to get rid of. So let's send it to the local police and let them bust people who are doing drugs or selling drugs. After 9/11, that program sort of shifted and it became about, you know, preventing active...
Preserving freedom.
Preserving freedom, a.k.a.
by taking away freedom.
Yes, so stopping active shooter situations or responding to mass shootings. So that's on its face. That's what they say today. To this day, that's what they say the militarization is for. They have to be able to combat all of these threats, all of these boogeymen we've been told that we're supposed to be afraid of. The funniest part is, so basically what happened is Mother Jones filed a Freedom of Information Act request to find out what police were doing, how police were justifying that they needed the weapons, because they have to go through an application process to the Pentagon. They have to fill out a form. They have to explain what they're doing, all the bureaucracy you would expect. And it turned out that a full quarter of those requests were citing drugs as the main reason that they needed the armored vehicles, which is ridiculous. At the end of the day, it sort of is in line with the initial stated purpose of the program. But the funniest part is that once this information came out and Mother Jones started reporting on it, his name is Jim Pascoe. He is from the Fraternal Order of – no, it's Fraternal Order of Police. And he basically said that it's not – the police aren't really using it for drug busts. We have the quote right here. He says, in reality, they're almost exclusively used as defensive tools. It's a rare drug enforcement case that would require an MRAP. We're talking barricaded shooters and downed officers. So he says that they're not really using it for drugs, of course. The Freedom of Information Act documents prove that, yes, they are. And you can just look at the news and see that they're using militarized weapons in order to conduct these raids. But the best part is that he said that the reason that they listed drugs as the purpose for needing the weapons is that they were just telling the Pentagon what they wanted to hear, what they thought they wanted to hear. So it's like, okay, are they doing it so that they can prosecute nonviolent people, or are they lying? Which is worse? Like,
who said that?
Which, that was the guy, Jim Pascoe.
Yeah, he's the head of the Fraternal Order of Police. It's basically the, one of the biggest de facto police
unions.
It's a police
unit. Drugs as a proxy for.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, wait, I thought the Pentagon's purpose was to be defending America. Isn't what they want to hear that they need the weapons to stop those active shooter situations? Why would the Pentagon want to be hearing that they're supposed to stop drugs? I mean, the logic just, it's not
exactly.
There.
Exactly.
You might as well just said, this is, we're acting on behalf of the prison industrial complex right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what you might as well. Hey, I got a buddy that owns a few prisons. Let's send the MRAPs down to your local police department. Go bust a bunch of stoners, throw them in jail.
We're going to make a few bucks here.
And so, you know, the fact of the matter is that it's kind of a bit of both. They're over-militarizing and they're using it. They used one here in San Diego to bust this kid that had mental problems that stole his mom's car. The kid ended up taking his own life because he was so scared, because he was barricading his house. MRAP rolls up, all this stuff, kills himself. He was a mentally ill 16-year-old kid that stole his mom's car. But the fact of the matter is they're using these SWAT teams, which have these armored cars, to go bust, supposed marijuana growers. Half the time they show up and they find like a couple joints and a pipe, and then they got a guy that's dead because they killed him.
Killable offenses.
And in theory, they say that we're using it to stop these huge marijuana grows. And yeah, because marijuana growers are really dangerous, apparently.
Well, we were reading a story today about this. It's sort of like a hippie garden commune in Texas, and they just filed suit against the police there because the police put all of these resources into trying to bust them for marijuana. I mean, they were raiding the place. They were flying over the place. And during the raid, they found nothing. They didn't find a trace of drugs, and they kept insisting that there were drugs there. And so how many more resources is the government, and especially local police, going to put towards these drug enforcement laws that are proving do nothing? I mean, there's this documentary called Culture High, and one of the things they discuss is it's like, it doesn't matter how many marijuana busts they make, it doesn't matter how many pounds of heroin or coke they seize, the drugs keep coming. It has nothing to do with how much enforcement you have. And if you're to the point where you need armored vehicles to try to stop marijuana, maybe the fight isn't worth fighting.
Yeah, or you got a story like one recently here that just happened a couple hundred miles south. The Coast Guard caught a cartel submarine trafficking a bunch of cocaine. And cool. Apparently they forgot to take 4,000 pounds of the cocaine out of the submarine before it sank. So they lost, quote unquote, lost 4,000 pounds of cocaine, and now everyone wants to know where it
went. Time to get the scuba gear out.
CIA.
But yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes to show this ridiculous insecurity that is going on with the state of affairs. I mean, yeah, they give us this excuse. Okay, it's for marijuana. Okay, it's for terrorism. Okay, it's for preventing riots and all this shit. In reality, what it comes down to is that they're militarizing local police departments, and when it comes down to it, all of this equipment can be used against you or us or anybody that doesn't stand in line whenever they're told to do a certain thing. Today, it's marijuana that's illegal. Tomorrow, it could be books, or it could be whatever. It could be anything.
Fahrenheit,
and if you don't give your books up, well, are they going to send an MRAP down your throat to go take them from you? I mean, that's the question, dude. Cannabis is a plant that is essentially harmless, and it's proving now, like, every day. In fact, we just posted another story today about this six-year-old girl that literally couldn't walk her entire life until she started getting on cannabis oil treatment, and then she was finally able to walk after 6 years. You know, cannabis is proving to be not only harmless, but almost a miracle drug to help people with almost everything.
That story made me sick,
man. I mean, our bodies are built with these cannabinoid receptors. I mean, our body literally needs cannabinoids to survive. The breast milk contains cannabinoids. Yeah, it's not from smoking weed. Our body produces them naturally, but cannabinoids also come from this plant, and it works in harmony with our body really well, you know. And so what we're talking about is they're using these massive, crazy militarized equipment to you know, wage a war against a plant that's actually beneficial for pretty much everybody. But it could be anything. I mean, government can outlaw anything they want. I mean, you know, there's a war on journalism right now. There's I mean, you know, they're criminalizing all kinds of these things.
Well-documented, I mean, war on journalism. You talk to any mainstream journalist right now, you will get an earload on what they are doing to crack down on independent journalism.
And I just want to say about this story, talking about how this Jim Pascoe is saying that they're not really using it for that purpose. That is really just a fundamental pattern with government. They say they're going to infringe on your rights for one purpose, and then they do something totally different. Oh, they're going to go wage war in the Middle East to keep you safe? It's not to keep you safe. It's to sustain the military-industrial complex. They're going to pass the Patriot Act in order to make sure no terrorists attack you? No, they're going to use it for drug busts, just like they did with the militarized police program. And it's consistent across almost every industry where they have a stated purpose that you're supposed to buy into, and then they turn around and do the exact opposite.
Exactly.
It's the truth.
Exactly. I couldn't have summed it up any better. Now, this is another subject that is kind of related here, because let's face it, they brought the military home, and the military is supposed to not be allowed to patrol the streets anymore. But they've obviously found a loophole with this Pentagon 1033 program, where they just turning, instead of saying, okay, let's send the army in and go police Ferguson, no, they just arm the shit out of these local police departments, give them the military weaponry, turn them into miniature armies. But this topic that we have coming up next is kind of related, but it's kind of involved with this the military spending, and right now we just reported several days ago about the amount of civilians being killed over in Iraq and Syria right now. Now, of course, we got this quote unquote war against ISIS. I like to call it a pseudo war, because the more we bomb these guys, the stronger they get. And looking at all the factors involved, it almost looks like we're not even trying to beat them. It looks like we're just trying to drop bombs and waste resources and make money for the contractors and stuff. Well, we got a report out today on the anti-media that kind of reinforces that. It shows that the military-industrial complex is increasing its spending by 28% for lobbying the government to spend more money, to drop more bombs, to do more actions overseas and do a bunch of other horrible things. The fact of the matter is we've killed over 500 civilians so far in Iraq and Syria, just in the most recent bombing campaigns against ISIS. This isn't even including the over a million people that have died, Muslim people that have died in the war on terror so far. I mean, keep in mind, this is all being waged over 9/11. Yeah, 3,000 American people died on 9/11. That's a horrible tragedy. But we're talking about over a million people dead over there in the Middle East because of our actions after 9/11. And the military-industrial complex, which everyone pretty much knows about, we all know that they don't have our best interests in mind. They've got their bottom line in mind. They want to make profit. And coincidentally, for them to make profit, they got to drop bombs on people and kill people. So they do have a vested interest in ensuring war continues. And this is kind of, you know, exemplified by this article here that shows that they're just spending more and more money to lobby the government to get them to do more and more bombing campaigns and more things like that. Jake is working on this awesome article. It's going to be up tomorrow on the anti-media about the military budgets. Because aside from the lobbying money coming from the military-industrial complex, we can kind of keep track of that stuff. But Jake has discovered that upwards of like 85% of the money that is spent by the military doing all the different things that they do, including black budgets, special ops, and all this stuff. We're literally never going to be able to audit that and find out what it's being spent on. We just aren't going to be able to do it. And why is that, Jake?
Yeah, well, the reason is because there's a nexus of international financial fraud going on that you should be aware of. It involves, the IMF. It involves the World Bank. It involves the World Trade Organization. It involves bilking investment money out of developing countries into fraudulent investments and making them beholden to the U.S. for eternally. And this money is used in a variety of ways, but it's also channeled, embezzled in the same way that you might say the mafia will use a washing machine, a laundromat to launder money. So too is the U.S. government using the IMF and various financial institutions to launder money that is basically untrackable. And it essentially amounts to about 85% of the federal U.S. budget. This isn't me saying this, folks. This is a woman, and you'll read it in the article, who's spent about a decade looking into it. This is all very trackable resources and whatnot. But yeah, it's eye-opening. It's not news. This is not news I discovered. This is just research I did and was shocked by and wanted to write something about it. But yeah, basically all the black op budgets, it's called the black budget. Hopefully you're aware of it. If you're not, research black budget. And this is money that's being spent on all these clandestine operations in other countries, Bolivia and a wide variety.
All over Latin America.
All over Latin America.
North and South America. I mean, the Monroe Doctrine requires the U.S. government to go and conduct horrible things in all over Latin America, you know, overthrowing governments, funding rebels, undermining democracies, you know, and look at what's going on in Venezuela right now. Perfect example. Yeah, sure, Venezuela is probably being mismanaged by their own government. But keep in mind, Venezuela is also basically in the same situation that Cuba was in for the longest time. You know, they're under this boycott. They're under an embargo. They're basically being screwed royally in every way imaginable economically. Not only that, but, you know, there's the U.S. government, through these black ops operations, they subvert their government by funding, you know, the opposition within
right.
Venezuela. And they do have organic, legitimate opposition in Venezuela. Sure, there's a bunch of people down there like, yeah, dude, this government sucks, just like every other government in the world. But the U.S. goes in and they fund those people, and they put radio shows out there. They put propaganda out there to undermine all this stuff. And, like, you know, if you look at Venezuela right now, you can say, yes, dude, a good portion of why Venezuela is so messed up. Keep in mind, if you're not familiar with Venezuela, I mean, we're talking about riots right now, looting right now on a national level. We're not talking
step three of the investment. Read the article tomorrow, but step three is called IMF, the riot project. It's step three and a half. Step three and a half is the IMF riot.
So, yeah, and now the thing to keep in mind about Venezuela is they're also resource rich. They got a bunch of oil down there too. And so, you know, you got riots and looting. We're talking, you know, we've talked about Ferguson tonight. You know, we're talking about looting in Ferguson. That's one city. But we're talking in Venezuela about on a national level looting going on right now. And the U.S. is in a major way responsible for that. And we're causing the pain and suffering of about 99% of the people in Venezuela. We're partially responsible for that. And that's just, you know, some more stuff to keep in mind, dude. This isn't even counting the stuff that's going
since
on
since 1905. The 1900s, not 1900s, 1910s, 1900 to 1910, they were doing that to the South American, Central American companies then. I mean, countries.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's been going on for a long time. Keep this stuff in mind. Look out on the antimedia.org tomorrow for this article. It's going to be an interesting one. Thank you all for tuning in. Manny, thanks for calling in. Sorry DB didn't join us tonight. We'll catch him on Monday. Catch everybody else tomorrow. Same place, same time, the Anti-Media Radio, 5 days a week. Peace, everybody.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.